No game 8 games into the season is serious enough to call it a must win. But for the Kings and the Orlando Magic on Saturday, it really feels like a game the Kings can't lose. Damian Barling and I discuss it and explain more on today's episode of the Locked On Kings podcast.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is that time. Time for another episode of Locked On Kings.
Hello and welcome into Locked On Kings, your podcast hub for Sacramento Kings coverage all regular season and all offseason, presented by BetOnline. They have you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline, where the game starts. My name is Matt George. I have the privilege of being your host here. I'm a Sacramento sports producer and reporter at ABC 10 News. And my friend, my colleague, Damian Barling from ESPN 1320's D'Lo and KC, been a friend of mine for a while, one of my favorite guests to have here on Locked On Kings. He and I discuss a wide variety of topics from this upcoming Kings and Orlando Magic game, Keegan Murray versus Paolo Banchero, and then we end our conversation talking a lot about De'Aaron Fox and the star recognition that he deserves, his great performance in the Kings win over the Miami Heat the first time around. There's a lot of great stuff in this interview, a bit of a long interview, so I hope you make it all the way through, but there's plenty of stuff for you to respond to and to join the discussion about. And of course, you can join the discussion on Twitter at MattGeorgeSack. You can email me, MattGeorgeSports@gmail.com. And if you're watching on YouTube, feel free to join the discussion there. And hopefully you enjoy my conversation with ESPN 1320's Damian Barling. Joining me right now from D'Lo and KC, Damian Barling, ESPN 1320's radio star, or is that Kenny? Kenny's the star.
Kenny's the star.
Damian's just kind of there, I guess.
Kenny is Shawn Michaels, and I'm Marty Jannetty.
Oh, no.
At any minute, he's going to throw me through the barbershop window.
Bodes well for you. Hey, one of the greatest moments in WWE history that you're going to be on the wrong end on. But Damian Barling joining me here on Locked On Kings for the upteenth time. So excited to have him back on. D'Lo, one of the main things that I want to discuss with you is the idea that this Kings and Orlando Magic game coming up is must win. I have a hard time saying any game this early in the season is must win, but it also kind of feels like can't lose for the Sacramento Kings, or it feels like one of those games where we know the Kings can get away with losing it, but if they do lose it, there might be a meltdown on social media and no Kings fan is going to feel good about any circumstance where the Kings lose, even if they have all the excuses in the world.
Yeah, and I want to make sure we clarify what you mean by that, because when you say can't lose, like sometimes you can mean, yo, we can't lose. But for the Kings, it's, hey, you can't lose. Like, those are two very different interpretations of that phrase. It's tough, man. I mean, the Magic get their second win, you know, by beating the Golden State Warriors. They scored 130 points. The Magic are the lowest scoring team in the Eastern Conference. And they put up 130 on the Warriors. So it's like, all right. And it's a really unique lineup of just giants, right? To continue the WWE analogy, it's like Andre the Giant and the Great Khali and then the Big Show. Like this is like their starting lineup. And I don't know. We've seen the Kings get pushed around a little bit by physical teams. Now, is it just because you're big doesn't mean you're physical, but there's a lot of things fans can be frustrated about the ending of the game in Miami. But for me, the bulk of my frustration lies that the fact they gave up 4 offensive rebounds in the fourth quarter, and all of those offensive rebounds resulted in points. It's extended those possessions. Like, they did enough defensively to get the stop, but they didn't finish the possession, and they allowed Miami to score there. So there's a lot about this Orlando game that I'm worried about. And it wasn't until Thursday's show that I realized, yo, Orlando at the time was 1-7. I didn't realize that. I'd watched them play a little bit. I'd watched them play Boston. I'd watched them play a couple of games, and I thought, like, all right, they're young. I see it, though. Like, I get it. There's a lot of young talent there. But I've been anxious about this game for the Kings for a while. And then of course, as scarred Kings fans, as scarred people who follow, you know, the Sacramento Kings, we know that these are the type of games that they generally just don't win. And I saw Mark Jones on Twitter applauding the Kings for not catching that South Beach flu. And it's like, yeah, they didn't, except they stayed in Miami an extra night and they didn't get to Orlando till Friday. So maybe it's just delayed onset South Beach flu where it doesn't actually hit you till the next wing when you're in Orlando. But I don't know. There's a lot about this game that makes me nervous, quite honestly.
The optics of this game are so intriguing because everybody who's a Sacramento Kings fan is looking at the situation like prime opportunity to get third win of the season, right? Prime opportunity to kind of make up maybe for the Blazers loss to open up the year. Like there's still a very good chance this team's going to be 3 or 4 games under 500 when we get through the first 12 or 13 games of the season, just with the difficulty of schedule. But it's games like this that you have to get, games that are, it's put on a plate for you to get a win and at least feel a little bit better about yourselves going into a tougher matchup. Which, by the way, the Kings end their road trip in Golden State again before returning home for some tough matchups against some good Eastern Conference teams. But then I think about it from the Orlando perspective, it's almost the exact same thing. Like Orlando's looking at this like, hey, we can build some momentum here. We just defeated the Golden State Warriors. Yeah. Now we got the Sacramento Kings coming into our building. They're 2-5. We're all looking for our third win. This is a prime opportunity for us to start building some momentum too. So it's just funny how optics works with games like these because, yeah, Orlando is a bad team, even though I think they have an extremely talented roster. They're a bad team. You could say almost the exact same thing about the Kings to this point. I think we think the Kings are a better team than what they've shown, but as of right now, they're a bad team with a talented roster. It's very eerie how similar these two teams are, even though us in Sacramento, I think we'd like to think that the Kings are on another tier.
Yeah, and I do think the Kings are on a tier above the Orlando Magic, and I think there are a lot of teams that are having, you know, obviously Orlando's not having a good start to the season, but I think Orlando was fine with where they're at. There are a lot of teams that are playing away right now that I'm not sure is going to be sustainable for the entire season. You know, it would take injuries completely out of the equation. I don't know that San Antonio and Utah are going to continue to play this way. And if they do, man, great for them. If Portland continues to play this way, like at this clip, yo, great for them, because that's a team that I'll at least as of this moment, I was just dead wrong about. Mm-hmm. But Orlando, you know, I think Orlando, we Sacramento is still Sacramento, right? No matter what, we watch them closer than anybody else does. We watch them closer than people around the league do. We certainly watch them closer than Orlando Magic fans do. And Orlando is looking at this, the Orlando Magic fans, not talking about the players, but the fans are looking at this like, that's Sacramento. Like, come on, man. Let's go get this one. Like the bottom of the Eastern Conference, not too sharp right now. Yeah, we could build our way, work our way up a little bit. And for us, you know, watching this team for now, 7 games, I think it is 7 or 8 games, whatever it is. This team is pretty solid. Like they haven't stunk. There hasn't been the only game that I was a little agitated with was the Warriors one. Cause they were getting blown out 90 seconds into the game. And it's like, come on, man, like don't do this. And they fought back. So credit to them. Like they fought back. And then, you know, that blitz at the end of the second quarter, but that was the only one that I was like, this is garbage. The Memphis game was frustrating for me for like a different reason. I thought they played well enough to win that game. Like every key, every point, everything that we said leading into that game, I want to see this. I want to see this. I want to see this. We saw it all in the first half. We saw an aggressive Harrison Barnes. We saw De'Aaron Fox getting to the basket. We saw the Domantas Sabonis, you know, still struggling a little bit to finish at the rim, but we saw his aggression level stay really high. And I was frustrated they lost that game, but not as frustrated with how they played. And so when you look at this Orlando team, it's so early in the season, and this is where we get kind of caught up. I just don't think this is the Kings team of last year. They should be able to beat the Orlando Magic.
Yeah, should is the opportune word there. And I... I guess the best way for me to sum it up is I know the Kings don't have to win this game to solidify any chances at postseason or play-in or anything like that. But I want to see a Kings team playing with a sense of urgency of a team that knows that they're better than what their record indicates. They know they're better than the team they're facing, and they're not going to allow themselves to fall into the same pitfalls, especially the players, the returners, the Harrison Barneses, the De'Aaron Fox, if he plays, the guys that have been on this roster for the last handful of seasons who have seen this team continue what's really been a problem for 16 years, which has been playing to the level of competition. I'm not saying the Kings are monumentally better than the Orlando Magic, but if the Kings are struggling to beat the Magic, that means the Kings are playing down to the Magic level. And that's not a horrible level, especially with players like Paolo Banchero on that roster, but especially if you're on the road and you're playing down to the level of a team that you, like you said, should be better than, or you are a tier above, or even if we're not talking about better or comparing rosters, look at the circumstances of where Orlando is in terms of rebuilding versus where the Sacramento Kings are in terms of kind of postseason or bust in a lot of ways. Playoffs are bust to maybe some members of the front office. So I just want to recognize that sense of urgency too from the way that the Kings play of, hey, we're a playoff team. This team's okay not making the playoffs. Let's show that. I think that needs to be seen on the floor. I don't need a commentators telling me. I don't need Mark Jones or Draper or Katie telling me that. I want to see the players playing like that as the circumstance.
Yeah, and you know, I think they got a first year head coach. I think Coach Mosley's a first time head coach too. So it's a team that's still really trying to find their way. The Orlando Magic still a team, really trying to find their way, and they will. In time, we said this earlier, Matt. They're talented enough. They're finding their way. Just don't let it be against Sacramento. Because Sacramento, like, they've played so consistently, it feels like there hasn't necessarily been a sense of urgency with them. Like, that's a credit to them, because there hasn't really been a need for a sense of urgency. Their games, for the most part, have been pretty steady. Thought they executed great against Miami the first go around, right? When they were, you know, Eric Spoelstra said post game, that was a team desperate to get their first win. He's right, but that's a team that team had played consistently well leading up to that moment. It's not like that performance came out of nowhere. And since the Miami game, they played well against Charlotte, and I thought it was a hell of a fight against Miami the second time. So they're a little more, I think they're a little more in their groove, if you will, than Orlando is.
And I almost want Sacramento to come into this game going, okay, they got their big win. They just knocked off the defending champion Golden State Warriors. All right, let's knock them down to size. Yeah. Bring them back to earth a little bit. Even 100%. If we're the Sacramento Kings, we can still bring this team back to earth. Well, of course, a big conversation or big talking point around this game, one of the main reasons to watch, is going to be the rematch of maybe the greatest summer league game of all time, Paolo Banchero versus Keegan Murray. Now, Keegan, it's weird. Like, he's in a slump, but he's not playing bad. Like, we've seen shooters be in slumps where it's just like, dear Lord. And as a shooter, you're supposed to shoot your way through it. And the one thing, and you know me, captain of the Keegan Murray fan club, so I don't know if I can say a bad thing about the guy, but genuinely watching him through this slump, what's made me feel at least a little better about the situation is that he hasn't forced anything. It's still like, okay, I'm still playing within the flow. I'm getting good looks. They're just not falling right now. I'm hoping he can get those to fall against Paolo Banchero to maybe help with some future rookie of the year debates or conversations down the line. But I'm sure he cares more about winning than anything like that. But how do you assess how Keegan Murray is playing and this slump that he's in right now? Cause I'm still okay. The Kings definitely need shots like those to fall, especially when they're wide open through the flow of the offense. But I'm okay with what I'm seeing out of the rookie.
Yeah, I'm gonna answer you, but I'm gonna ask you a question first, because I'm trying to think back, and I don't remember if you addressed this in the post game Locked On podcast. I remember you talking about the travel. I remember you talking about the way that they were playing. What do you think about Keegan not playing the last 9.5 minutes?
Yeah, I did discuss that. And it was, I basically, my whole theme of the post game podcast was I was having a hard time finding anything from that Kings loss to be really upset with. Like, and that's sometimes pretty, especially going back to last season, there was always something to be upset about with a Kings loss. And this was just like, well, hard fought game. Tyler Hero hit a great shot. Maybe he traveled, maybe he didn't. Last 2 minute report says he did travel now. So we know he did travel. Okay. I'm kind of okay with how the game played out and letting the game winner stand basically. Mm-hmm. But like Malik Monk was playing really, really well. So I'm not taking Malik Monk out, and Harrison Barnes has been there before. Even if Harrison is not playing as great as maybe Keegan Murray has played at times so far this season, I know Harrison's been in those moments before, and the Kings are already missing their star and De'Aaron Fox in that moment. So I actually was, again, I wasn't mad about Keegan Murray not being on the floor there at the end, especially with how he was struggling. But let's put it this way. If Keegan were out there, I don't know how much of a difference it would have made for how the game ended up. So I wasn't too bothered by it, but I understand why maybe it would have been a better overall look for the Kings to have him out there.
I wasn't mad, but I kept thinking in the moment, because I'm with you, I wanted to take Malik Monk out at all. But I was very much thinking, man, 4 minutes, 3 minutes, 2.5, I think I'd put Keegan in over Harrison. And not a knock on Harrison. You just mentioned Harrison had been there before, but it's not like he was, for lack of a, he wasn't doing anything. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, so, okay, you're not, at worst, you're not losing anything by putting Keegan Murray in, but maybe in these moments, and I thought he showed this against Charlotte, where he wasn't shooting particularly well, but when the team needed a basket with like 4 minutes and some, he hit that big shot. Like he's not going to shy away from it. He's not going to be afraid of it. He's not going to, very rarely is he going to make a bad basketball play. I think he fouled someone on a 3-pointer in that game where it's like, you can't do that. But that's probably the worst thing Keegan Murray's ever done in his career. but back to your original question in assessing the way that Keegan is playing right now, it's funny because we look at this as a slump. We look at him like, you know, kind of being down a little bit, and it's funny because he hasn't had this moment yet in his career, not in summer league, not in preseason. We didn't hear a bad thing about him in training camp, where all of a sudden, so 12 points, 7 points. Is Keegan okay? Is he hitting the rookie wall? What's going on? Nothing. I think absolutely nothing of it. And I expect, like, every game, I'm going to expect him to play better against Orlando. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't, that's fine. When they play Golden State, I'm going to expect them to play better at Golden State. If this 2 games turns into like 7, 8, 9, or 10, then I'm going to start, okay, what's going on right now? But with the way he started the season, a couple of little mishaps, some shots not falling in the last couple of games, I'm not stressing over it at all.
This episode of the Locked On Kings podcast is brought to you by Bet Online. It's your number one source for all your football and basketball betting all season long. And of course, that's professional, NFL, NBA, and college. NCAA, they have it all for you. You can find all the latest player developments, team matchups, news, podcasts, and in-depth analysis on every single game. And hey, they have fun future bets too. Award bets surrounding maybe the rookie of the year betting with Paolo versus Keegan coming up. Who do you think will win rookie of the year? Paolo Banchero is the favorite. I think Kings rookie Keegan Murray has the third best odds. Benedict Mathurin has the second best odds in Indiana, last I checked. Regardless, as always, BetOnline remains the continued source for all of your sports wagering information, with live betting and up-to-the-minute scores for every single sport out there. It's the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite games and events, including the World Series, MMA, boxing, golf. They have so many more. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more at BetOnline, where the game starts. You know, it speaks volumes to me how quickly Keegan has built the confidence, not just of the fan base, but just in general. Before this this last game, the second Miami game, Keegan's worst stat line was 9 points, which was game 2 of the California Classic. He scored double digits every and that was like, okay, but even in that game, I think he had 9 rebounds, so he flirted with a double double. So it's like, okay, Keegan, every once in a while, it's an anomaly if Keegan has a bad night. So he so quickly, with his performances in summer league, and then he comes in first game against the Clippers. How many points did he put up in that game? Like 17 or 18 or something like that. Also guarded Paul George. And it's just, okay, this is who Keegan Murray is. And like the first Miami game, I think, is a perfect indication of that. I didn't feel like Keegan Murray had a like statement game in that first Kings win against the Miami Heat. You go back and you look at the stat line and it's 22 points on 8 of 13 shooting. You're like, what the hell? Like, what? Like Keegan just coasted to a 22 point performance. And I think that speaks volumes to where he's at as a player already this early in his career, where he can be unimpressive or not jump off the page as a rookie and still drop 22 against a team that has championship aspirations in the Eastern Conference. So like that, I'm just really excited to see him face a player in Paolo Banchero who is on a, again, quote unquote, bad rebuilding team who just puts up ridiculous numbers.
You know, it's funny about Keegan in that night against Miami, the first Miami game is you mentioned he just coasted like quietly, the most Keegan Murray 22 point game ever, right? Just quiet, nothing. Malik scored what, like 19 in Miami, and it was electric. It was fire. Like he scored like 8 points in like 90 seconds.
Yep.
And it was, you talk about Keegan just quietly going to 22. Malik Monk had an electric 19 against the Miami Heat. And it's just so funny how different those two games are. Those two point totals are from those two players. Like Keegan Murray, just the most, just exactly what you'd expect from him. Malik Monk, exactly what you'd expect from him, like an electric, just explosive output. Keegan, no, I'm just gonna hit a couple threes in the first quarter. I'll hit one in the second. I hit a couple in the third. Score some points in the fourth, and you won't even know I was here.
I've been thinking about this, and it might be an exercise, but I'm not a big fan of the idea of, hey, swap Keegan and Paolo. Put Paolo on the Kings, put Keegan on the Magic. That's not really what I'm trying to get at here, but I'm thinking of a comparison between the two and thinking about what they've been doing so far in their careers. Obviously, we watched Keegan a lot more than we watched Paolo, and you see Paolo with these big stat lines and big point totals and the star of his team right away, and we see Keegan as impressive stat lines, quiet 22 points. I know he's on a team that both the players only have 2 wins in their career, so it's not like he's directly impacting winning necessarily at this point, but he just feels like he just fits and shines within the flow of an offense. And I compare the two and I just wonder, like, what is more impressive? Like when you're looking at it from a bird's eye view, 1,000 feet up in the air, it's stats and highlights of Paolo versus consistency and just like NBA readiness and clear fit in Keegan Murray. What is more impressive, I wonder, to those who might have an impact in the voting of Rookie of the Year at this point?
Man, that's a great question. Man, that's a great question because I think we're all under the assumption people aren't watching Sacramento,
right?
The people who vote on this, like, they're not watching Sacramento. It's easier for them, many of them, to watch Orlando because of the time. You know, it's not the Sacramento Kings at 10 o'clock on League Pass. And yeah, Paolo's going to be on significantly more House of Highlights clips. Mm-hmm. He's going to be, you know, tweeted out by Bleacher Report and the different outlets a lot more than Keegan Murray is. It's a completely fair question, and you know, to answer, I think it's going to have a big impact. Mm-hmm. It's almost a Malik Monk Keegan Murray thing I said just a second ago. Like Paolo might have 16 points in a particular night where Keegan might have, you know, 20 and 7 assists or 20 and 8 rebounds or whatever, or any combination of those three stats. But Paolo's going to have a dunk where he's like 8 inches above the rim and it's going to get screenshotted and sent all over the place. Or he's going to have a stretch where he, you know, blocks a shot on one end, comes up on the floor and does a LeBron James-esque dunk. Or he's going to get a chase down block, or he's going to get one of those things that everybody is going to see over and over and over and over again. And I don't know that Keegan Murray is ever going to have that play. That Keegan Murray, like, his biggest highlight would likely be the equivalent of the Jordan shrug. Like, he'll just hit a bunch of shots in a row and look at De'Aaron and go, hey, just keep getting me the ball. And I can't even imagine Keegan doing something that risky. You know what I mean? Like, I just imagine him walking back to the huddle after hitting 14 threes in a game and, oh, no, that's cool. Yeah, no, keep going. Whereas, you know, Pat, like, I don't know if it's still called the Amway Center, but whatever the arena is called in Orlando, which it'd be going nuts. He'd be on the table. And it's the unique difference between those two. And I do think that's a great point. That's going to make it more difficult for, you know, Keegan's steady stat line to, you know, if it's close, Keegan's steady stat line to beat out Paolo Banchero.
You know, Paolo and Keegan both have the weight of expectation on their shoulders, but it's very different weight in the sense that Paolo's the number one overall pick. You're expected to put up numbers. You're expected to be a star when you're number one overall pick. You have to be the best in your draft class. You were taken number one overall. Keegan Murray has the weight of expectations that I almost see similar to De'Aaron Fox of he needs to be a part of a winning team. And that's where I look at him and Fox as in very similar circumstances for two very different awards. Like Fox needs to get wins to be an all-star. Even if he's playing like an all-star right now, he needs his team to win to get that all-star nod. And Mike Brown has said the exact same thing. He said the only thing that's going to hold De'Aaron Fox out of the all-star game is going to be our record. Keegan Murray, I think, to win Rookie of the Year, is going to need the Kings to win basketball games and for him to be an important starting piece of a team that turned it around and actually made the postseason with this 16 points, 45% shooting from three-point range if he averages around that stat line with six or seven rebounds or whatever it is. Even if Paolo's averaging more, the fact that the Kings are successful and Keegan's a big part of that, I think, separates him from Paolo there. It's weird how a star and a rookie are both, for their individual accolades, so dependent on wins in Sacramento versus in a situation like Orlando. Numbers and highlights and flair,
yeah,
is almost guaranteed to give Paolo that award, which he'll probably deserve.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the only way it's a sham is if Paolo winds up playing like 42 games and Keegan plays, you know, 77 or something like that, which I hope that doesn't happen. But yeah, Paolo's very capable of being Rookie of the Year. Like he's a phenomenal ball player. But you're right. Everything accolades wise is dependent on whether the Kings win basketball games. And that's just, you know, that's what Harrison Barnes talks about. Like this team should have an opportunity to be a team without the weight of 16 years on their shoulders. Like that's not their fault. That's not this team's fault. But when you wear that Sacramento Kings jersey, and I think that's part of what Mike Brown was talking about, that Kings jersey, that's what he was talking about post game and after Miami, when he called out the travel and he made some references to the way that team has been officiated. I think it's you carry the weight of 16 years of losing when you wear that jersey. And that's true for De'Aaron. It's true for Keegan Murray. Like I always use the example of DeMarcus Cousins. DeMarcus Cousins was so good, it became impossible to ignore. And he was so good and they still ignored it. But it was almost like, okay, if he does this again next year, we have to acknowledge this. We've got to put him in the All-Star game. And he did it. Like, not only did he do it, like he surpassed what he had done the year before. It's like, yeah, we've got to acknowledge that not only is DeMarcus Cousins an all-star, he's probably the best at his position in the entire league right now. And I think that a lot of writers, a lot of NBA people, they remember that. And they're like, yo, did the Kings really have the best big in the league when they couldn't get anywhere? Like DeMarcus is not, but what did it all mean? Like they never got anywhere. They never did anything. And I, you know, we've seen the ridiculousness of people like Bill Simmons tweeting about Davion should, like, even suggesting that Davion Mitchell is the best guard on the Sacramento Kings roster is nuts. It's absolutely insane. Suggesting you should trade De'Aaron Fox so Davion can, I love Davion. He's a ball player, but suggesting you should trade De'Aaron to get more run out of Davion is NBA brain dead.
If De'Aaron Fox were playing in 29 other cities, I'm convinced that he would be annoying to us in Sacramento because we'd see him everywhere. The same way
Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yeah, SGA.
That's exactly what he'd be. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Yeah, that's actually probably a better example. I was going to say, and of course we've heard this comparison a million times, but John Morant in a lot of ways. Like that guy that's just, the highlights are out there all the time.
But at least Memphis has built something. Like Memphis is winning. And I love Shai a lot, but Shai doesn't seem to get held to that winning standard that De'Aaron is supposed to have. And it's, I don't know if it's because he was traded from LA to Oklahoma City. I don't know if it was because how much, you know, Doc Rivers and that group in Los Angeles loved them and how they shed tears and all of that stuff when they traded him. But he is constantly acknowledged as one of the best, one of the best, one of the best. He's this, he's that. And it's like, yeah, Shai is dope, but why is he not held at the same standard that De'Aaron is? Because he doesn't win. He doesn't help that team win. And that team is bad, and most people would contend that team is purposely bad. But why does Shai get a pass in that regard?
Yeah, the treasure trove of draft picks that Presti has, I think, really, it doesn't win the argument for SGA, but it's a convenient way to ignore it.
Like, yeah, right.
It's okay. SGA, put him in a box. Doesn't matter that he's not winning or not, because look at all these picks. So damned if you do, damned if you don't type thing, because Shea's either going to put up 30 and it's going to be great and they're going to lose, but Shai looked great, or, yep. Oh, Shai sucked. Oh, well, that's, he's supposed
to. It's
his team's
fault.
Right, yeah, it's OKC. So, but it's a general point of, like, and I know it's quieted down and calmed down a little bit because Fox essentially hasn't played the last two games. He played 9 minutes versus Charlotte, whatever, got hurt. But De'Aaron has been playing at an absolute star level to start this season. And I got laughed at, not just by some Kings fans on social media, but actually by some of my colleagues. Like my colleague Kevin John at ABC 10 gave me a chuckle a little bit when I said that the Kings win over the Miami Heat, De'Aaron Fox had 17 points in that game. To me, that was not just his most impressive performance of the season for me at that point. It was one of the most impressive performances of his career to me. And it wasn't because we know De'Aaron can score, right? He started the season putting up 33. Then he put up 36 in game two. The Kings lost both those games. It wasn't De'Aaron Fox's fault. And I hate the fact that that's a convenient, lazy argument that others can make, like, well, Fox puts up these big numbers and the Kings still lose. Ho-hum, it's Fox's fault. He can't put up good numbers on whatever. Oh, and then when the Kings get a win, Fox only had 17, so he was sharing the ball. No, that's not the point. The point is that in that particular game, what impressed me the most about that Miami game is Fox recognized that in that fourth quarter, the Kings didn't need scoring. The Kings already had the lead. They needed a defense. They needed to hold. And it's not the first time in De'Aaron's career, it's definitely not the first time this season, that De'Aaron asked for the defensive assignment of taking on the guy that was as red hot as Tyler Hero was in that fourth quarter. But he did it. And he steps up in that moment. And I counted four possessions against Tyler Hero, went 0-for-3 with a turnover. Like, and one of the possessions was a turnover push off foul when Fox was just smothering Tyler and he couldn't get any space. So he literally had to push off. Like, to me, that's more, that instance right there, that game was more winning basketball out of De'Aaron Fox than I've seen it out of any point during his career. Even when he's dropped 40 or 50 points in his winning Western Conference Player of the Week awards, he had to do that to give that team a chance. In this game, he didn't have to score. He had to play defense, and he stepped up to it. That's what we've been asking from De'Aaron all offseason. That's what we've been asking from De'Aaron basically his entire career. To me, that deserves more acknowledgement, not just in the NBA landscape, but even in Sacramento, than when he puts up 33 or 36 points.
Couldn't agree more. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It was a superstar performance from him. And that's what you need your superstars to do, is whatever the team needs. And we always associate it with scoring, hitting baskets, being clutch. It might have been the best defensive game of De'Aaron's career. I thought that performance was incredible. Was it his best performance ever? I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of hyperbole in that. It feels like it was now a lot of this is hindsight and we may feel differently in, you know, 70 some odd games from now, but looking back, okay, De'Aaron was averaging what, 30 and some change. He was scoring, you know, 40. Okay. What did that mean? What did it do? Okay, it got them, what, instead of 10 games under 500, they were 9 games under 500? Mm-hmm. Like, again, we could look back in 70-some-odd games and go, yeah, that performance didn't really mean anything. Right now, in the moment, the performance was incredible, and it felt like it meant more. Because I know I have, and I'll be, you know, transparent. A lot of the reason I felt this way is because when you and I used to work in the same building every day with Doug Christie, I would spend a few minutes with Doug, and he would, De'Aaron could really be a top flight defender. Like it's just a few things he's got to do, but he could be an all NBA, you know, one of those, you know, top, all NBA defenders. And it's like, okay. So I started watching him a little bit differently after that. And we all know his skill set of speed and reaction. Yeah, De'Aaron could do that. De'Aaron. So I've been hanging on to that for years. So to finally see it now, that was one of the reasons I was so excited about Mike Brown as the head coach, is I thought, man, maybe we'll finally get to see this version of De'Aaron Fox that Doug Christie talked about so many years ago. And I think we are. And that was that defense on Tyler Hero, where Will Z had some stats that he put out about like the percentage he shot against as De'Aaron Fox as the main defender with the percentage he shot as anybody else as a defender. And it was just incredibly different. Like De'Aaron was all over him, and I just couldn't applaud De'Aaron more for that game. It was like, give me more of that. But what's tough about games like that is I think it's tough to do that. I think it's actually easier for some of those guys to score 27, 28, 29, 30 than to do what De'Aaron did in that game on a night to night basis. I think it's different because it's a completely different mindset. And, you know, obviously I think the flow of the game took De'Aaron into that position right there, but I think we're going to see a lot more performances if the Kings, you know, keep themselves in contention and nothing goes nuts here, and they're playing a lot more meaningful games as we get into January and February and March. I think we're going to see a lot more performances like that from De'Aaron Fox.
You know, it's funny. It's with how good De'Aaron is offensively, he had to work harder, or look like he had to work harder, to put up that kind of defense than he does to score and to get to the rim. Like, that's just natural skill for De'Aaron versus, okay, I'm putting my head down, you're not getting past me, you're not scoring on me, you're not getting any separation from me. Like that, to me, it should be more impressive.
When you're on offense, you're in control of everything.
Right.
Like, you know exactly what you're doing. It's like a wide receiver versus a cornerback. Cornerbacks are great. They have to be so reactionary. They have to follow eyes. They have to follow feet while keeping their speed up. It's so much more difficult as a defender because you don't know what the person in front of you is doing, but you also don't know what the other four people on the court are doing. Mm-hmm. And you're trusting the other four people in your uniform are doing what they're supposed to be doing. You're hoping they are. In De'Aaron's case, most of the time they haven't been. So it creates, you know, like a, and I think that also shows the trust that he has in this group, to where he can lock in this case, Tyler Hero, he can lock in on Tyler Hero while knowing everyone else on the floor is going to do their job at a high level that will allow him to stay here and not have to venture off somewhere else because someone, my bad, a defensive assignment, and there's a corner three open.
You know, it's great that you brought
not
up
that anyone would do that.
Oh, how many times we've seen it. You brought up Doug Christie's comments about De'Aaron having defensive player of the year potential, or being one of the best defenders in the NBA potential. And some of us may have heard that years ago and maybe rolled our eyes at that. But I think this also speaks to how great of an eye Doug has for basketball and how he's meant to be in the coaching scene, because Mike Brown said something eerily similar to that after the first Miami game, after the Miami win. He said when he watched De'Aaron Fox back at one of his basketball camps when Fox was a kid, he thought that was going to be Fox's meal ticket. That's how Fox was going to make it to the NBA, was being the best defender on his team. And that's how he came up through high school and even through college, as being one of the best defenders. It wasn't until he got to the NBA that's kind of slipped a little bit, which is pretty common for almost everybody in this league with how offensively driven it is. But D'Lo, I want to wrap up with this. You'd ask Fox, he'll tell you he can do more. We're not going to pretend that what Fox is doing right now is absolutely perfect and he couldn't do anything any better. But I'm also realistic about how much one guy can do for an organization, for a franchise that has struggled as much as the Kings have, for so many new faces that are trying to figure out how to play together when they're taking on the majority of competition who is better or more experienced or more established than them. What do you think De'Aaron could do more of at this point to affect more wins? Like, or to flip the Kings record, to make them 5-2? Like, what could De'Aaron be doing or have done more at this point? Because there's something. It's not a lot, but there's something that he can do.
Man, I hate to be a bad podcast guest. I don't know.
That's
like, I really don't, because in my head, the first thing that I'm thinking of is I don't feel like he has to. And I wonder how much of the Miami game that they lost at the buzzer and De'Aaron missed that. I wonder how much of that helps guys like Sabonis and Malik Monk, who were the prime distributors for that game. And, you know, Davion did it, you know, Davion was solid in his role, but even when De'Aaron is here, a lot of that offense is going to flow through Domantas Sabonis. And we saw, you know, arguably Sabonis's best game, certainly, you know, pretty close to it, particularly because he was able to be on the floor the whole time. And we said that was one of his best performances. I mean, he was near triple double numbers. He was distributing everywhere. And I think when you have guys like Malik, like Domantas Sabonis, who can take that,
right,
that pressure of getting everybody involved off of De'Aaron's shoulders, I think that just allows De'Aaron to play a more comfortable, like a more relaxed version of his style. Like, it's not constantly that my hair's on fire, I've got to do something. It's like, let me pick and choose my spots. What do I got here? I got some room here. I can get to the basket. Oh, mm-hmm. Let me see what we could do here. Oh, weak side over there. Let me go to Sabonis. Sabonis can find Keegan or Harrison or Malik or whoever, Kevin Herter, who is the greatest Sacramento King in history. And I don't have an answer. I don't have a single gripe with the way that he's playing this year. Especially the way the team is made up.
My only answer that I could come up with, and it feels very cookie cutter because he's done this to some extent, but I think want to see a little more of, not at the end of a game necessarily, but when the Kings are in a rut or they're trying to stop a run or they're trying to get some momentum going, when they're in like a slow patch or they're struggling a little bit, I would still like to see De'Aaron just say, okay, for the next few possessions, get on my back. I'll carry us through this. But he's done that. And what's funny is I think back to the obvious answers from years past. Okay, De'Aaron, hit more threes. He's doing that. Okay, De'Aaron, hit your free throws. He hasn't missed a free throw in 3 or 4 games. Like, okay, De'Aaron, play better defense. He's doing that. Okay, De'Aaron, distribute. I mean, he doesn't have to distribute as much as he did in the past, but I would argue that he's still
doing it. Yeah.
And he's still distributing by getting to the paint and doing what Mike Brown and his offense is reliant upon. Even if he's not getting the assist, him getting to the paint affects everything else around him. So you almost want to give him a sub assist because of something like that, like a paint touch assist, PTA, we're going to call it, and start trying to track that every single game. Because like every single way in the past, and this is the best compliment I think I can give to Fox, especially with how critical I was and others were of Fox this offseason, how he needed to get off to a good start. It's okay. Here are the 4 major things that Fox could do more of. He's doing all 4 of them. The Kings are still 2-5 at some point. And that's where I said it on Twitter. I've said it during the podcast. At some point, everybody else needs to do something for him and help him make an all-star team, because he's doing his job. So I'm with you. I couldn't be more thrilled. Again, I could see a little bit more of him just doing almost the Tatum or the Giannis or the, I am the superstar, let me carry you through here. The Steph Curry, let me hit 2 or 3 3-pointers in a row and just kind of retake control. I could see, I guess we could see a little more of that from Fox, but also with this team, with how good this roster is, he shouldn't necessarily have to do that this season as much as he's had to do that in years past.
It would have been interesting because there's been caveats to each game. And I think he took over or attempted to take over maybe a little bit in the Charlotte game, at the end of the Charlotte game, if I'm remembering correctly. But
Charlotte was when he got hurt, I think.
Sure, you're right. Charlotte was when he's got hurt. So it must have been the first Miami game where the lead was starting to shrink, or it wasn't starting to shrink. It had shrunk.
Yes.
And it was virtually gone. And they needed someone to make a play. I think there was a stretch late in the fourth quarter where De'Aaron tried to do that thing where, all right, I'm gonna make sure we don't lose this game. It would have, if we could, you know, fantasy book this last Miami game to where it plays out the same way. extremely competitive game, right, from start to finish. Jimmy Butler's available. De'Aaron Fox is available in it, in it, in it, in it. Plays out the same way till the final, you know, 90 seconds, 2 minutes, whatever it is. How would it have played out with De'Aaron Fox there? You know what I mean? And that's why I said, let's put Jimmy Butler into the equation too. Mm-hmm. Let's set the scenario exactly the same until we get to the 2 minute mark. How will it have differed with Jimmy Butler on the floor and with De'Aaron Fox on the floor? What would De'Aaron's approach have been? It's a good point. It's a completely fair point. I would love to see that too. Cause we know that he's capable, but we also know Kevin Herter's capable of hitting anywhere on the floor. Keegan Murray, no matter what his stat line is, he'll take a big shot. Malik Monk ain't scared of anything. Sabonis, that's what you're here for. Like, there are other guys on the floor who can do it too. So if taking over for De'Aaron in those late game moments just means making the right basketball play, I'm good with that too.
That's a good point right there. Well, hopefully we'll see De'Aaron Fox actually playing against the Orlando Magic. I don't know if you've seen or heard anything. I haven't seen anything at this point, but the Kings could certainly use him for that game. But even if he's not playing, the expectations are still for the Kings to get that win. Of course, you can listen to D'Lo breaking everything down with KC, ESPN 1320, noon to 4 every single weekday. And then D'Lo, this will not be the last time you or KC are here, of course, on Locked On Kings. Appreciate you, my friend. Hope you have a great show today. Great rest of the week. And hopefully we're talking about a Kings win on Monday.
I hope so, man.
Big thank you to D'Lo for joining me here on Locked On Kings. If you enjoyed that, you need to check out their show, D'Lo and KC. He and Kenny Caraway do a phenomenal job there. Just incredible local, but also national topics that they discuss. Also, sometimes get out of the range of just the standard sports. So they talk about WWE wrestling from time to time, if you're into that. Talk a lot about music, a lot about culture, a lot about politics every once in a while. There's so much great stuff on that show. Truly an incredibly unique and fun show. I also have the privilege of being featured on that show every once in a while, which is always a pleasure for me to join. So to have D'Lo here on Locked On Kings is a real treat. Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And I hope you will stay tuned with me here on Locked On Kings following the Kings and Magic game on Saturday. We'll have a post-game edition of the Locked On Kings podcast, so I hope you will join me for that. Until then, my name is Matt George. You have been listening to the Locked On Kings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.